Hi, friends. I'm Pearson Cross, host of Bayou de Beltway. Today we are joined by Provost Jamie Hebert at the University of Louisiana Lafayette to talk about what the school is doing to prepare for the influx of students as we head into this completely unusual semester. Welcome to the show, Provost.
Thank you very much, Pearson. Happy to be here.
Now, you're a native. You were born in Abbeville. You came to UL, where you got a degree in statistics. Then you got a master's and then a PhD in statistics from UL. You went on to teach at Appalachia State. You went to Sam Houston. You rose there meteorically, some would say, up to the rank of provost. Then you went to Georgia Southern and became president there before returning to your alma mater, UL, as provost.
So that's correct. That's correct.
Well, let's dive right in because we got a lot of ground to cover, and I'm sure people would like to find out what the heck UL is doing about what's going on. You know, it's late summer. Schools and universities are starting up, yet this does not feel exactly like a normal year. COVID-19 has made things different, has altered everybody's schedule and approach to a significant degree. And as provost, you are the point person in terms of the academic side of UL Lafayette. Tell us, what's UL done to meet the challenges of COVID and opening up and just being a university in this kind of atmosphere and situation?
Sure. Well, as you said, COVID-19 has really thrown a curveball at us in higher education. But it's also made everyone's lives topsy-turvy. And we began back in early May with a task force beginning to look at our resiliency plan for reopening this fall. And that task force consisted of administrators, faculty, even some students on there, and staff from areas like our facilities and so forth. And we began looking at really at every aspect of operations at the university and looking at what the risks would be associated based on what the constraints were at that time. And as you know, as the months went by through the summer, things begin to change again. But we laid out some very systematic risk matrices associated with all of our operations and then began developing plans where we knew that, we could keep safety, enhanced safety protocols at the forefront of everything that we were doing. We could protect the academic mission, and we could adhere to the Office of Public Health and the CDC guidelines in everything that we were doing. And we put these plans in place, and really beyond that, beyond the safety protocols, what we did is put the academic mission in the hands of our faculty, and our department chairs, because our faculty and our department chairs did such an extraordinary job in the spring of reacting to the pandemic very quickly, but very effectively. And we knew that given the planning constraints, the planning parameters that we were developing as a task force, that the deans, department chairs, and faculty would find a way to push that academic mission forward. And we could do it safely as we could by following those plans.
Safety is really the key to this, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that is the key in the sense that everybody has to feel secure about what they're doing or the whole thing falls apart.
That's exactly it. Safety is number one, always is. And frankly, even outside of the pandemic, in higher ed, the safety and the well-being of our students is one of our top priorities, along with the academic mission. But in this scenario, you even put health and safety and well-being of not just our students, but our faculty and staff as well. That even takes a little precedence over the academic mission.
Right. And that's kind of interesting. You know, we're so conscious oftentimes at the university of thinking about the health and well-being of our students and are they getting the content and how are their lives and those kind of things. But in this COVID panic, it's actually perhaps faculty and staff who are more at risk from COVID than the actual students.
Yeah. You know, the risk that exists out in our communities right now is going to be carried into the university campus. You know, there's no way to prevent or seal off the university from the pandemic. So what we have to do is put extra safety protocols in place because we're going to have a lot of people on sort of a postage stamp of acreage, you know, at every university, not just at UL Lafayette, but at every university in the country. And so adherence to those protocols and our own personal behaviors are going to be instrumental in our ability to maintain safety on our campuses. We have got to understand that we're in this together and that wearing masks and using appropriate social distance and sanitizing our hands appropriately and using sanitizer appropriately, these aren't options if we want to stay safe. We have got to do it because the risks aren't going to diminish when students and faculty and staff get on our campuses.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Now, it seems like, for one thing, every university in the country is coming to grips with what to do. And of course, for people who don't know or don't think about this regularly, like administrators and staff, faculty do, universities, as you say, are very complicated. They're UL has almost 20,000 students, and they're dumped on a postage size stamp, and they live together and eat together and play together and go to school together. And it's so it really is so complicated. Have you looked at what other schools are doing, and is that something that helps you calibrate your approach to different kinds of protocols?
Absolutely. In fact, the entire higher ed community has really come together in terms of sharing information and sharing ideas about how to approach things. For us in particular, we have a weekly meeting amongst the provost at all of the University of Louisiana system schools. And we talk about what's going on at each of the different universities. And we share those ideas, and I have gotten some great ideas to bring back to our task force, and many other of the universities in our system have adopted our protocols. So, yes, we're sharing ideas, and we're looking very carefully at what's going on at other institutions.
That's interesting. So, UL, you started planning back in May, really, to deal with this, so that's May, April, June, July, August, you know, so there's really 5-6 months of planning gone into this. Do you feel like UL is a leader among the University of Louisiana system schools?
Oh, I really do. I really do. And I think we're leaders because our staff, our students, our faculty really took this seriously back in May. And really worked hard. I mean, we literally had hundreds of people turning over every stone we could to look at risks associated with all of the facets of the university operations. And our plan is exhaustive. It is very deep. We don't publish all of that because it's an enormous amount of information. But anytime we're making, say, higher level decisions, we can fall back on those risk matrices and look at the data that's in there and the updated data that's in there to help us in making these decisions. But that approach, that very meticulous and systematic approach to assessing risk with regard to all of our operations is something that was adopted by the entire system. And they turn to us regularly to look for what we're doing.
That's great. We are talking, in case you just tuned in, to with Provost Dr. Jamie Hebert of University of Louisiana Lafayette. So let's talk about this in terms of a couple of specific issues. So how is content delivery for students, meaning the classes they take, how has that changed or how is that changing in the face of COVID?
Well, I think I think everyone is aware that when we flipped back in the spring from face-to-face instruction to remote instruction, which we did in 5 days' time on this campus, which was a remarkable accomplishment by our faculty, we knew that things would be different. And I mean, you would be fooling yourself if you thought that you could deliver exactly the same type of course remotely as you would face-to-face. There are just aspects of face-to-face instruction that you can't replace in that remote environment. But that said, our faculty set some pretty high standards for themselves in regards to pushing those courses remotely. And in one of the surveys that we conducted at the end of the spring semester, our faculty felt, by and large, that they were able to maintain high academic standards in their courses. And in a student survey, students felt the same way. So we're very proud of that. And I'm very proud of our faculty for accomplishing that. So things will change. There's no doubt about it. And given the opportunity to return to face-to-face instruction, I think a lot of our faculty and a lot of our students in many of our disciplines would jump at that chance. But that's just not the reality right now. But our faculty are the ones who are delivering a bona fide university experience to these students remotely.
And that's certainly a challenge. Well, I think when people do think of the university, they tend to think of, oh, well, the courses are I had at Professor X and I like them. But what about the other stuff? What about housing? What about meals? What about facilities? What about sports? What about all that stuff? What's going to happen?
Sure, sure. We actually, those were particular areas that we focused on a great deal. Housing especially, as you imagine, residence halls on a college campus can become a hotspot pretty quickly. So our housing plan is very extensive and very detailed. We have limited capacity for appropriate social distancing in our residence halls. We have protocols for ingress and egress so that we maintain social distancing. We have takeout available for dining services. Our dining facilities are buffet style, so they have worked very hard to put in tape and other signage within the cafeterias and socially distanced tables, so that students will be in a safe environment in there. They're also limiting the amount of student contact with regard to buffet and so forth. You might notice in restaurants when they were open that the manner in which we serve ourselves in restaurants is very different in this environment. And we're adopting those same sort of safety protocols within our dining facilities. We also recognize that with students on campus, you know, there's more to the university experience than just the classes. So our Residence Life program has worked very hard to put a lot of residence student activities programming online so that there are virtual experiences out there. We have rewritten our activity protocols so that we are limiting the number of students who are participating in any activities, any face-to-face activities, and requiring that any university organization that does meet face-to-face has very strict protocol on providing a roster in the event that we have a positive, so that we can do contact tracing immediately. And they are required to follow distancing, maximum capacity for assemblies, and appropriate sanitization, and wear masks in all of those situations. So, you know, it's touching every aspect of the university experience.
Boy, that's for sure. Well, so let me pose a scenario to you. You're stepping out of Martin Hall. You're walking across campus. You notice there's a group of five students. They're sitting pretty close. Nobody's wearing a mask. What do you do?
I'm going to walk over and have a good conversation with them. You know, it's one thing to it's one thing to enforce policy. It's another thing, though, when you're on a university campus, when you see students who aren't adhering to these sorts of things, to turn them into a learning experience, you know, and just talk to these students about the impact or the potential impact of what they're doing without following appropriate protocol. It's not just an effect on them. You know, if they're sitting there and one of them happens to be carrying that virus, and they transmit it, and then that person goes home for a visit and transmits it to their grandmother without knowing, you know, that is an impact that they just don't want to have. You know, this is a temporary situation, and the protocols that we're asking people to follow as individuals are not unreasonable. We just have to do this for a short amount of time for the good of everyone. And that would be the way that I would approach that with those students and try and turn it into a learning experience.
Well, I certainly hope that that will work. As we've seen in our society, sometimes the simple idea of wearing a mask is there's a certain amount of resistance built into
sure.
that.
Sure, sure.
So let's talk about what's keeping you up at night. Is it the certainty or near certainty that students, faculty, and staff are going to be exposed, that you are going to get confirmed cases? What happens when a student, what happens to that student? Let's say a student starts feeling bad and then goes to the health unit and gets a diagnosis. What happens at that point?
Mm-hmm. Sure. That's what's keeping me up at night. It's all of the things you mentioned and then some. It's the uncertainty of what this pandemic is going to look like even 2 weeks from now when we're 1 week into school. Things are changing on a daily basis, and we're having to review our plan and be nimble and sort of change horses midstream, you know, and that uncertainty is not something that any administrator, any person is really comfortable with. The certainty, as you said, according to the CDC and any of the statistics that I look at with the CDC and with the Office of Public Health, we know there is an extremely high probability that we will have COVID cases on campus. And so the certainty associated with that is unnerving as well, as you might think. But I think on top of both of those, you know, those are direct obstacles that we're going to be facing in the near future. But the long-term impact on people is one of the things that keeps me up at night. You know, this is having emotional and psychological impact, not only on our students, but on our faculty, on our staff, and the recovery from that, the emotional and psychological recovery from everything we have gone through, I think personally is going to extend well beyond this pandemic. And so that's one of the things that keeps me up at night is, you know, we have such a magnificent culture, a compassionate culture here, an empathetic culture here, and we want to maintain that as we move forward. So, you know, taking care of people, I think that's the number one.
Yeah, and of course, UL has already suffered a loss of an administrator Carolyn Durrell, who is assistant dean in the College of Liberal Arts, passed on Saturday, and that was a very sad moment for
tragic.
those who knew her. And one hopes that that won't be repeated, that the angel of COVID will pass over the school. But of course, that's the ultimate threat that everyone faces. Let me change directions a little bit. Again, if you just tuned in, we're talking with Provost Jamie Hebert at UL Lafayette. The university received some money from the CARES Act, which is Coronavirus Aid Relief and Economic Security Act. I think it was about, we get about $5 million or something like that.
Somewhere $5 to $6 million in that range.
Mm-hmm. What did we do? Have we spent the money? Is it in a bank somewhere collecting interest? What's going on?
Well, there were some restrictions and some directions associated with that money on how it had to be allocated. For one, 50% of that money needed to be returned, allocated directly to the students, not for university operations, but directly to students to offset a fiscal impact of the pandemic. And we did that. So 50% of the CARES Act funding was allocated out to our students in the form of checks. They just received those checks directly. They don't go onto their accounts. They couldn't be used to pay university debts unless they chose to do that. That it was money that was mailed directly to those students. And then the remainder of that money went into general fund to offset some of our revenue losses that were associated with the spring semester. We gave a number of reimbursements in different areas. We had some fee losses. We had losses in auxiliary programs, things like vending. No one was on campus, so we no longer had money coming in from vending. Students in the residence halls, we prorated their amounts. So we used that CARES Act money as a stopgap for those revenue losses in the spring semester.
Do you think Congress is going to allocate some more money for colleges and universities?
There's discussion out there. You know, in our Congress, congressmen and senators have all indicated that they're working very hard to push for more legislation at the federal level to provide funding for higher education, and we're hopeful that more CARES Act funding is coming in.
Now, enrollment, as I understand it, at UL has not tailed off significantly and is remaining fairly flat right now. Is that a bit of a surprise?
If you would have told me that at the end of the spring, I would have been surprised that you were saying it. I anticipated enrollment drops everywhere. But as the summer went on, you begin to look at the different layers of the onion, if you will, and you begin to see that, you know, in a time like this, students are and families are looking for things to hold on to that have some promise of a future. You know, people are so anxious and so concerned about things going on today that they are investing in their futures. And one of the best ways to do that is through a university experience. And so I think families are really putting at the top of their priority list maintaining the ability to send their sons and daughters to school. And I think you're seeing that not only here, but across the state. Enrollments are really leveling off.
One of the things, and you've mentioned families, is that in recent years we've noted that the university family is made up of many different kinds of people. Sure, there are lots. The majority is made up of students between the ages of 18 and 22 or 23 working their way through their traditional college experience, but there are also a number of single mothers, parents, students that are adrift from their family, students with disabilities. Does that create a separate kind of set of issues for this time when we're grappling with COVID?
I wouldn't say a separate set of issues, but they were additional issues that we already focus on, that we had to put an additional amount of effort into. So, for example, our disability services have modified a lot of their processes and their procedures. You know, how do you work with hearing impaired students who need accommodations when faculty are wearing masks? And so we developed new protocols to handle those types of situations, making, for example, face masks with clear plastic available to faculty who have hearing impaired students in their courses. So we tried to turn over as many stones as we could in those areas as well. Also, with regard to families at home, to, as you said, single mothers who might be pursuing a college education, we began working about a year ago with the university system on a program called Compete Louisiana, which is making education accessible to working adults via online education. And so I think we having those types of programs in place has served us well and served those particular subsets of the demographics at our universities quite well within the pandemic.
Now we're coming to the last couple minute and a half of our interview. Tell me briefly, what do you think will be the long-term effect of COVID-19 on the operation of UL Lafayette?
Yeah, well, not only UL Lafayette, but higher ed in general.
Mm-hmm.
This is a major disruptor. This is going to change the landscape of higher education. I think pedagogy is going to change. We're finding, and this is from faculty, we're finding that some of our disciplines, we deliver better in a hybrid remote format. And I think you're going to see us playing with that, playing with the pedagogy in the future in higher ed, seeing a lot more online operation than we were seeing before. And that also, not only in higher ed, but the nature of the workplace, the culture of the workplace, I think is going to change permanently in the United States. It's the idea of working remotely, whether we liked it or not, it's here. And what we're observing is that a lot of people, we work very effectively remotely. And in fact, in some of our areas, it's more efficient and more effective to be operating remotely. And so I think you're going to see the workforce change a little bit in the coming years. You know, getting away from punching a time clock and looking more at productivity. And I think this disruption is here to stay.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone would argue with you about that. We've been talking this morning with the provost of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, Dr. Jamie Hebert. Thanks for joining us, Provost.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Thanks for having me, Pearson.
Absolutely.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
Did you miss your favorite KRVS program? Well, we've got you covered. Visit krvs.org, scroll over Audio on Demand, select your favorite program from the list, and find an archive of past episodes. Listen anytime, anywhere.
At atmospheric songmaker Joan Shelley speaks from her hometown of Louisville on the banks of the Ohio River. And then a trip to Appalachia with Blue Ridge piano man Jeff Little and his amazing ways with fiddle tunes played on the black and white keys. It's Songs of Rivers and Mountains on American Roots from PRX.
Coming up Friday afternoon at 1, right after the Blues Box, here on KRVS.
KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.